Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
One day only, Thanksgiving Day deals are coming to Lowe's.com. Plus, members get early access to online Black Friday doorbuster deals on gifting favorites, like the still-trending Cobalt Mini Toolbox for just $14.98. Don't miss up to 50% off for one day only at Lowe's.com. We help you save. Valid 11/27 only on Lowe's.com. Member only doorbusters and Midnight Eastern. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change. While supplies last.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Own a small biz and need a reliable way to reach new customers? Try TikTok for Business.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today with TikTok for Business. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
Aloha, Mr. Han.
Well, all right there. Welcome in, everybody, on to a Wednesday edition of Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, TJ Cleland here with you on this Wednesday. Max Power producing. He's got your KFH hotline ready to roll at 869-1240, ready for reaction to KU Wichita State last night. Both men's basketball teams go down on the road. Won a true game, true road game for the Shockers, a neutral court game for KU. We'll dig into both of those contests throughout the show today, including a visit with our KU insider, Shreyas Latta. So make sure you are tuned in for that. Everything on the show today brought to you What's on Tap by the Wichita Brewing Company, where groups gather for holiday fun, beers with the boys, girls' night out, a glass of wine with a longtime friend. WBC, the place where groups gather for the holidays, East-West, Historic Delano, Wichita Brewing Company, pizza and beer made here. It is a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday as we welcome in TJ. TJ, I'm there. I've got the long sleeves on, but I'm representing on a morning.
Well, I might be too under this. I don't know. Nobody knows.
I can see your shirt. You're not. I'm glad I'm here. I'm rolling in at about 80%, 70%, 60%. So we're here. We're ready for Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. We're going to motivate the world to have a great Wednesday, despite TJ two losses last night on the men's basketball schedule.
Sucks. The real going to bed pissed off at the world type of sucks. No, I'm just kidding. It there's positives to take away. It does sting for the Shockers more than KU, I think, because KU. I mean, KU could go 0-10 in November, and we've talked about this, is that they've got all their room ahead of them to do whatever they want. The Shockers, you know, we've talked about an outside chance that, you know, the American has been a multi-bid league every year, basically, the past few years. I don't know if it will be this year, but, I mean, the opportunity could have been there if they could have, you know, taken care of business last night. Now it's going to hurt down the stretch that, you know, they might have lost their only chance to have a quad one win on the schedule outside of maybe going to Memphis. I don't know if there's another one on the schedule that they would have. So that it stings in the fact that they probably, I mean, you can make an argument. They should have won that game. They were up 7-0 to start the game. They got it back to a chance to win it at the buzzer, and they couldn't get it done. Just a lot of mistakes in between those two things that's going to cost them.
Yeah, we'll dig
into it. You look good.
I think for the Shockers, I mean, they're about to play St. Mary's. Colorado State's more highly ranked right now than Boise State. Granted, those will be neutral court games, but they're going to have some chances for big time wins. And then you'll have to see what happens in the conference. I think it's probably, I mean, that is very forward thinking. It's probably a little early for that right now. We're just, you know, we're trying to see if this Wichita State team can compete in the American. That's I think the next step at large. We got a ways to go, I think, to start thinking about that. They fall. You mentioned it, 62-59. They had a chance late. There's a lot to pull out of that game, and we will throughout the show today. Kansas falls 78-66, 12 points for those of you following the 11.5 point line.
Wasn't a hook? I thought it was.
Yeah. It was in a silly, you know, foul at the end of the game to get him over. I looked up at the end. I was trying to flip back and forth, and I was like, how did they get up to 12? Because it was closer than that pretty much the entire second half. But that's where it got. No Darren Peterson. We learned that about lunchtime yesterday that he wasn't going to go. But I mean, come on. He's engaged on the sidelines. Like, he's fine. He just has a hamstring injury.
Side note here, which we kind of talked about yesterday, for actually at length yesterday, is the fact that Bill Self had to release a statement that Darren Peterson wasn't going to play whenever he said the last time that he spoke that he is out for the immediate future. I don't know where the hope came from that he could have played. Like, I thought that was something that's just like, yeah, chalk it up. He's not going to play against Duke. And he still had to release a statement yesterday at noon saying, hey, he's not going to play. In case anybody missed that, Darren Peterson's not going to play tonight.
I think it's because he doesn't have a timeline. And so right now he can't just come out and say he's going to miss the next 3 weeks. I don't think they have that good a feel for the injury. And so it's created this confusion. I just hope at this point everybody understands, like, the guy has a hamstring injury and they're not going to push it. Like, that's it. Like, there's nothing more than that. And so what does that mean for his timeline? Well, let's see when his hamstring gets better. It's a hamstring. Like, they're annoying. They last a long time and they're really easy to re-aggravate if you don't give it the proper amount of time. And so the problem is they don't have a timeline. Like, they don't know how many games he's going to be out. And it tells me he's probably closer than farther away, or they would at least say for at least the next couple of weeks, you know, whatever. But, and I'm trying to think back historically to this kind of thing with Bill Self, and it's not even really that unusual for him to not, like, Remy Martin was a weird injury thing. I think Kevin McCullough was a weird injury thing. Remember McCullough most recently? Yeah. I just don't think that's something that they're particularly good at, like coming out and be like, oh, he's going to be out for 4 weeks now. Like,
kind of did it for Kevin McCullough.
If we look back though, like, it's always a little vague and a little, you know, eerie and leaving room for interpretation. But this one doesn't look anything to me like Kevin McCullough when you see what's happening and what's happened. Like, he looks engaged. He looks, you know, I think he wants to play. I think that he's got a bad hamstring. And why on earth would they push that? It would make no sense for them to push that. And so they got to figure out how to play without him. And you know what? I thought they did a pretty good job last night.
I know. If I'm being honest with you. I feel like we're talking about pre-Leipold KU football, the way we're all taking moral victory laps around here without playing.
It's not I mean, they lost the game. There. It's not a moral victory.
But, I mean, people are. I mean, I am too, honestly. Like, I feel like they played well. Like, I think that it was something where it was the nature of, like, who will score when Darren Peterson's not out there? I think last night we got some answers to that. Granted, the bench scored 5 points. It did not what you need out of them. Honestly, the bench –
Did the bench ever play? I got to both games in the second half. I'm not sure I saw anybody come off the bench.
The bench shot 7 field goal attempts. That was it. So I guess it was Jaden Dawson, basically, was the bench. And El Marco played for 6 minutes as the next highest.
Yeah.
That's the scary part.
I think the reason you're getting, and look, I'm not taking moral victories away more as much as just like trying to evaluate. I think a lot of people thought KU was going to get beat by like 30 points last night because Duke's really good. And that's where I think you can have some, like, that was a 4, 5, 6 point game most of the second half. I think that's where you can take some things out of it and feel a little more okay. And we'll get into the specifics of that, but there was plenty for me, like as I'm trying to watch it and watch two basketball games at once, by the way, one on a phone, that stupid Mountain West network, that was annoying. But like there were things where like, okay, like I could see that. Like I can see that later on. Because they're so uniquely positioned for a KU team to be so funneled into one guy that everything else around them, where we really don't know anything, at least we're learning a little bit. I think we learned a couple of things last night that, yeah, that carry with KU, and you plant in the best player in the nation to that, and you feel pretty good about
it. There's something there. They're going to beat a lot of really good teams, I think. I don't know what they will be. I don't know if they will be a really good team, but they'll beat some really good teams.
I agree with that.
Speaking of the Mountain West Network, my biggest grind my gears last night is we were doing things all night, and then finally I got to turn it on at about like 9 o'clock, and I didn't look at my phone. Like I took my watch off, put my phone in the other room. I was like, I'm not spoiling the Shockers game. Turned it on, started to rewind it back to the start. Didn't do it. Missed the entire first half.
Oh, yeah, you can't read it. Yeah, I learned that too when I tried to go back for the last shot and get another look at it. Okay, let's come back. Let's dig into these games. What did we learn? We've got a lot to get to today. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up. It's Sports Daily. It's a Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. We're coming right back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Lowe's, loyalty is royalty. With Christmas right around the corner, treat yourself for less during the holiday season. Rewards members get early online-only access to Black Friday doorbuster deals on Thanksgiving Day, like the Hisense Side-by-Side Fridge, just $799. Not a member? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid 11/27 only on Lowe's.com. Member only doorbusters and Midnight Eastern. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is your reminder that shoes are a gift. Literally. So unwrap something good. Like boots that inspire your next big adventure. Or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in. Or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes. They're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you and everyone on your list at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or DSW.com.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads and grow your business fast.
commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, here to Sports Daily. You can't count on much these days. You can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game all season long, kicking off with the juicy Week 12 matchup between the Indianapolis Colts and Kansas City Chiefs. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. We come back in reacting to a couple of college basketball games last night, including the Shockers who fall in a road contest to Boise State 62-59. Hopping on with us here for a biweekly visit. We're happy to have him, Kevin Saul, Wichita State Athletic Director. Good timing, Kevin, as we react to the first adversity for this, what's been an impressive team so far this year.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Hope you're doing well. Yep, got home late last night, early this morning, and plenty to work on. I thought we competed relatively well yesterday. Obviously, you play a top 50 team on the road. It was a great environment. Had a great crowd. I thought our guys responded well. You know, at one point we're down 15 and fight back to three. I think we had three straight possessions down four and one possession down two, and just couldn't get that bucket when we needed that bucket. But I was proud of their fight. And at the end of the day, you guys, we've talked about it all the time that we don't do moral victories. It's a great opponent. It's why we scheduled the game, so we could find out what we have early. And we're on to the next one. We've got a really good Milwaukee team that I think was down four to Texas Tech at Texas Tech with 10 minutes to go. And it's a really good club that's coming in here on Saturday night.
Yeah, Kevin, it was a good test for this team last night, a pretty comparable with the Mountain West opponent, a team that's picked towards the top of the Mountain West. The one thing that has confused us, we talked to Coach Mills about it on Monday, and now the sentiment really amplifies after what we saw last night. How did Boise State lose to a Division II team? That's a pretty formidable opponent.
You know, I studied that box score last night after the game. You're talking about the Hawaii Pacific mm-hmm. game. And if you look at the stats, guys, like everything is within a plus, you know, it's a plus two or minus two, whether it's rebounds, three-pointers, field goals scored, foul shots made, just a really, really tight neck-and-neck game. What I think you're seeing from this Boise State club, played Montana State, I think won by five or six the other night, is they have a tendency to fade a little bit late. And I think you saw that in the Hawaii Pacific game, definitely saw it in the Montana State game that I saw. And I think we saw it last night, right? You're up 15, maybe think you got it in the bag, and we end up going on a 6-0 or 8-0 run to get it back in close. And like I said, we had three possessions down four. And again, it's you play a top 50 opponent on the road, guys. The three of us all know that every possession matters. So you can point to possessions at the end of the game, but you can also point to possessions at the beginning of the game. You know, Will coming down with his second foul, I think in the 6 minute mark in the first half, certainly hurt because I thought we had an advantage on the inside. Emmanuel did a nice job filling in for him. They really, really tightened down defensively on Kenyon, which was expected. And I thought Michael Gray stepped up and did really well at the guard spot. But you can look at numerous plays, whether it's finishing three or four buckets in the paint or finishing down in the block three or four times. There's probably 8 or 12 plays that can get you the one possession that you need. So it's close. At the end of the day, we got a lot of work to do and a lot of season ahead of us.
It's interesting too, Kevin, when that feels like a good American, you know, a game on the road and conference play. I think some of the things we were looking for that we just hadn't had a chance to see yet, when you go on the road and you don't knock down 16 of 32 threes, what does that look like? Well, it looked like they grinded it out, made that game, you know, ugly is the wrong word, but you know what the style of game we're talking about there, they out-rebounded them and they gave themselves a chance. I think no moral victories, but that's something that translates when they start playing conference games on the road. If they play that way defensively and they rebound on the road like that, they're going to be in this situation with shots at the end of games to win games, I think, quite a bit in the American.
Yeah, I think so. And if you look at Boise State sitting at a top 50 program, that would be at the top of the American right now. So you got Memphis sitting at 76, South Florida at 77. You know, that's one of the better games on our schedule. Obviously, we cannot look past Milwaukee. Great club, as I mentioned. You've also got one next Wednesday against number 24 in the country, St. Mary's. So we get another opportunity. It's a really great opponent there, but a lot of work to do on Saturday against Milwaukee. So to your point, I definitely think that's a, you know, that's a top two team in the American, and it's a really good test for us. You know, you hate to take the loss, but I think we can take advantage of the lessons that are learned in a game like that, and I think they'll pay dividends for us in league play, particularly on the road.
Yeah, it's obviously a loss last night hurts, but just overall speaking of what we've seen this season, you know, I feel like that we've seen things that we've been impressed with. It seems like Coach Mills has seen things that he's been impressed with, and the thing that I keep telling people is that it's not the stats aren't comparable to a win over Loyola Chicago. You compare the stats to what we've seen in years past whenever you want to see the improvement, and I feel like we've seen the improvement through these first four games, and I imagine that you would echo that sentiment.
I would, and we've talked about it before, guys. You know, you get these guys on campus June 1, and you've got them here for 5 months, and you're trying to pick up any data point that you can that tells you what you got. And at the end of the day, I think it takes 6, 8, 10 games to really, truly understand what you have from a competitive standpoint with all the rotations and those sort of things. But it is certainly better. And when I'm asked in the community, how's our men's basketball team going to be here? That's my response is we're better. We are certainly better than we've been the last 2 years. We're 3-1 to start the season. We can hit shots from the outside. We have the ability to score in versatile ways in the block. We'll still put pressure on the paint and pressure on the rim and try and work downhill. I think those pieces are good. Defensively, we'll be better as well. And so I think it's tough to argue at this point that this team is not better. It certainly is, but guys, we got, you know, we're four games into a 31 game schedule, so we got a long ways to go. We got to stay healthy. We got to keep getting better, and I think we'll be right there at the end of the deal.
You can, Kevin, find me with about 10 fifth grade girls going crazy and screaming Saturday out there in the stadium. How is attendance and how are crowds looking for you guys moving forward? Is there momentum building for what the team's been able to do, and are you seeing that translate as we get into more of the sweeter spot of the schedule?
Yeah, it's certainly been better, guys. You know, we've talked about the season ticket numbers. I think we're going to land somewhere around 550 new season tickets sold. We're going to land somewhere around the 89-90% renewal rate. Believe it or not, we're still selling season tickets. And so people are excited about that. I think you see the attendance. We got a great schedule. We got 9 games on the weekend, 7 of those on Saturdays. So it's a really accessible schedule. So to your point, Jacob, we have seen some improvements in the attendance, but obviously the product on the floor, and everybody wants to be a part of a winning product. So we got to continue to get better and keep winning basketball games. And that piece will take care of itself for sure.
Now up next, before we talk to you next, after Milwaukee, of course, whenever we talk to you next, I believe it'll be after the Thanksgiving tournament, going to the Battle for Atlantis. St. Mary's in there. You know, Vanderbilt's a team in there. How big of a midseason tournament will that be?
You know, it's a really strong field, guys. Really impressed with the field that's been collected there. We'll leave next Monday. Tuesday's a practice day. We place St. Mary's the last game in the evening on Wednesday, and then depending on how that game goes, we'll get either the winner or the loser of Colorado State and Virginia Tech, which, guys, those two teams, Colorado State and Virginia Tech, were within 5 KenPom rankings of Boise State last night. So either one of those opponents will be a very strong opponent as well. So next week is a great opportunity for our guys to enjoy a really cool destination, but also get better amongst some really great competition. So we're looking forward to that next week as well. But obviously we've got a really good Milwaukee team. These guys have played really well. They've had a week to prepare for us. And so expect a good fight on Saturday night, and our guys will be ready.
Before that, and before we let you go, real quick, mention of Shocker Volleyball, a chance here as they open up the conference tournament on Friday for revenge against a team I know is a heartbreaker at Coke Arena, the lone, I believe, meeting between those two teams this year, but a chance for revenge. And how are the Shockers looking as the postseason begins at volleyball?
Yeah, so they're great. And I think you've got enough student athletes from last year's team that there's some confidence going into the conference tournament that, you know, if you're within the top five seeds, you certainly have a chance. So we match up against North Texas on Friday at 12:30 p.m. And the winner of that game likely gets Rice again. So definitely a very firm Rice team. You guys saw those last Friday. Those guys came into Coke Arena. It's a really quality volleyball team. So I think we've got some good confidence. That tournament's down in Tampa, Florida. So if we can get this first win against North Texas, anything can happen. And I think they've got confidence to do a nice job there this weekend.
GoShockers.com for your tickets for the basketball game against Milwaukee. It'll be the best time slot so far this year for a game, Saturday evening game. Kevin, we're looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting the Shockers back on the court after that first tough loss and see how they bounce back.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for having us on the show, and go Shockers.
There goes Kevin Saul, Wichita State's athletic director, joining us here. Good timing as we are all sort of taking it in and reacting a little bit to that first loss of the season. TJ, I thought the Kevin's point on Wilberg was good. Getting early foul trouble there was hard on them. I do think Okorafor was also good in the game, but they're going to need Berg to not do that, because he has looked, I think, better than anybody outside the program expected, and they need him on the floor, especially when they play a team like Boise who has all that size.
Yeah.
That was a tough thing for them to overcome last night.
That was your first real test of another 7-footer. And I don't know what the American has in terms of 7-footers,
right,
but now, you know, to stick him in there, and he played well. He just, you know, was limited on the time that he could be out there. So, like I said, I think that this loss is, like, obviously, I feel like I'm speaking like in obvious terms here, so much better than, you know, the Kansas City loss last year. Like, that was the first adversity that we saw a year ago, yeah, whenever they lost to UMKC. Like, this is a loss, as we keep saying, no moral victories, but like, this is a loss that you could see in February and be like, well, you know, that's a good
team. Yeah, and
I don't want to
underreact to the loss too. They shot 4-15 from three. So they follow the best 3-point shooting, you know, performance perhaps in team history with a 4-for-15. And that's what, you know, without that, they go from 100 points to 60. So,
I mean, that's what 3-point shooting teams do. I mean, sometimes you live and die by it. Sometimes you're not going to make them.
And I don't know that. And when we've talked about this a lot, and look, we'll see over time. I don't know if being a quote unquote 3-point shooting team is the recipe. And that's what, and, you know, we were having fun with that, because given a hard time follow up, I don't know how good they'll be with the best, you know, 3-point shooting contest in school history, but I would rather see them generate offense in a lot of ways than be a quote unquote 3-point shooting team, because this is what happens when you take that on the road. This happens all the time. This is what happens when you play a really good defensive team that can make that difficult on you. So one of the big questions I have still about this team now, 4 games in, is where does that offense come from, right, when they're not knocking down threes? It didn't come last night. They only scored 60 points. They scored 59 points. So where, okay, the threes aren't falling. Where do you generate that offense? They shot their free throws okay. That's a good sign, I think. But they're going to have to be able to score without shooting threes. We know that. Like, the teams that can do that are rare. You know, when you think of BYU teams that chuck it 35 times a game, like, that takes us, that's a different animal. I don't think that's where the Shockers want to live, taking 32 threes a game like they did when they hit 16 of them.
No.
I think what we saw last night, and we've seen this a couple times, under 20 is probably where they're going to want to live, but that means they have to generate offense in other ways.
I think it'll be right around that 20 mark is where they'd want to live. And last night, it's the same thing that we saw in the opener against Asheville. If they're, you know, if they're not shooting gangbusters, they'll stop shooting. They've proven that. And so I think that they do. I think that Will Berg is a big part of the non-3-point shooting offense, because, I mean, last night, if you watched it, you could kind of see some Paul Mills vision going into what they did in the half court. And it was like, they'd run an off-ball screen. You'd see Giles or Gray coming off. It's like, that's your first look. And then you'd usually get a hedge and a switch, and you get Will Berg down low. And about every single time, it was either going to Giles or Will Berg, and you build off of that. And so I think that they do a lot of that stuff. I think that the foul trouble hurt them last night. There was a lot of fouls in this game. They got 21 fouls on the team. But I think the biggest thing, non-3-point shooting, I think that, like you said, that's something that's going to happen on the road. You have to find ways to win around that. You turn the ball over 11 times. You know, that's probably the thing that Coach Mills would point to, the first thing, if I had to imagine.
Yeah, I mean, 11's not awful, but it's not where you want to be. They forced 10. Their assist to turnover was not good. 9 assists to 11 turnovers.
Yeah, it was a lot of unforced turnovers, it felt like, too. There's a lot of
I totally agree with you. Like, it was there was a time there, and a lot of it was in the second half, yeah, when that you feel like they're starting to come back, and then they dribble it off their foot, and you're like, where does that come from? But they got to pass the ball better. I'll bet you right now, if we asked him what he was most disappointed in, he would say 9 assists.
100%.
Like, they have to pass the ball better than that if they're going to be an offense that scores without shooting threes. And it's okay. And here's where you go to the glass half full, and I think we both feel this way. All of that being said, they had a chance to tie the game on the last shot. Yep. They didn't play well at all offensively, like in any capacity, any facet, other than they got to the free throw line, I suppose. Like, they didn't do anything particularly well offensively, and they had a top 50-ish team on the ropes in this. Yep. That kind of stuff translates. Like, that's the kind of thing that good teams that are capable of winning road games in tough environments do. They get it ugly, and then at the end of the day, they've got a chance at the end of the game. And to see them do it, you'd love a win. A win would be better. They didn't get the win, but at least they played the way where you can envision wins in that kind of environment down the road.
Yeah, treading lightly on this, but I think that, like, the unforced turnover part, like I said, 3-pointers, you're going to miss them on the road. And that's just, you know, historically speaking, stats-wise, you will shoot it worse in road arenas, sure, than you will in your home arena. The unforced turnover thing is something that, you know, you hate, but you kind of feel positive about if you are going glass half full, because that's something that it's not like we are turnover prone. Like, it was something that was like, what the hell was that? Like, we can fix that. That's an us thing. Like, that's not something that they did to enforce that onto us.
All right. Quick sidebar, TJ. I didn't call you on this right away, and I should have. Did you say you had to go not in real time to catch the Shocker game there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm going to – is that because you needed to watch Dancing with the Stars in real time?
It was the semifinal, Jacob.
Is, but that's, I just want to be clear that
make your own conclusions.
I just want the record to state that when given the choice of
live basketball
and Dancing with the Stars, we chose first Dancing with the Stars and then took the pivot to
listen, it's possible in theory. It should have been possible where I could have seen every game without spoiling a second until the Mountain West Network screwed me over. And that was the plan. I was going to watch that, then at 9 o'clock, start the Shockers game, finish that at like 11, and then probably go right into at least the second half of the KU game and have it recorded as well. And the plans got foiled.
But
I had a strict schedule.
You could have also just not watched Dancing with the Stars right at that moment.
Well, then that gets spoiled more than anything, Jacob. Like, that's impossible to miss the spoilers of that.
It is, I suppose. Here's the reality for you, though. I have no idea what happened on Dancing with the Stars last night. So it's not impossible. Like, I have no clue. I needed to clear that up here, publicly and for the record to show. All right, let's talk KU and Duke. Duke is good. They're talented. They're good. I don't walk away from that game with any more or less concern for KU than I did walking into it. 12-point loss. It was pretty tight most of the second half until the very end. There should be no you walk away typically in a season when it's Kansas. There's nothing to pull good from a 12-point loss to Duke. And I agree with that. But the reality of the roster isn't normal Kansas this year. They have, by all accounts, the next great star basketball player who hasn't been able to play. And then they've got a roster we quite frankly don't know a lot about that's very non-traditional for KU. It's basically an entire new team. I've been following this team very closely for the last, I don't know, how long have I been here? 12 years. I don't remember a team ever walking through the door that we knew less about than this year's Kansas team. And that's with Darren Peterson, right? You can't spend 3 years with basically returning everybody and then reset that all at once and have it be normal. Normally, for Kansas, we would see, right, two or three returners that have been 3 or 4 year players in the program that are doing all these things. And you watch this Kansas team play, and we don't know much about any of them. Flory Badunga, we know the most about, and he was a freshman last year that didn't play very much. So it's hard because it's just not what we're used to doing with Kansas to look at it and say, okay, what do we take away from that? They got beat by Duke by 12. Who cares, right? What do we take away from it? That's not a normal thing to do with Kansas. With Kansas, it's normally, are you kidding me? They lost by 12 to Duke.
That's
unacceptable.
I haven't looked and seen if anybody wants to fire Bill Self yet. I said that they were going to, but I don't know. I've seen kind of positive reviews on the social media machines. So I think the one big thing that I take away from this, I'll ask this first. With Darren Peterson, like we've talked a lot about what the roster is, and it's been amplified without Darren Peterson out there, is with Darren Peterson on the court, like, do you feel better about this team than you did the Grady Dick team?
Not yet.
But you think
yet.
You could? Like,
I could, yeah, absolutely we could. We could feel better about the real comparison that we need to make is, with Darren Peterson on the floor last night, is there a world where you feel better than you have the last couple of years?
Well, the last 2 years I feel like aren't a good example because ends.
They started the year as preseason number one, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they did. They obviously didn't live up to those expectations, and it didn't work. That combination of players didn't work. But I think right now the benchmark is to be better than those teams. Can you see, and I get your comparison because Grady Dick was the National Gatorade Player of the Year, but Grady Dick was inserted into a team we knew far more about than the team right now that we're watching, in which we have 5 starters out there, 6 players, okay? And the only thing we know about any of them is Flory Badunga. That's it. Of the 6 guys who played meaningful minutes last night, that's it.
Yep.
So, What are you looking at with that? I mean, that is an entirely new team. So how do we even set an expectation for that? And I think that's where, and you probably are seeing some of this from KU fans. It's like, man, Trey White, he could play. Melvin Council offensively was a bigger factor than I thought he could be against a team like Duke based on what we had seen so far. I continue to be impressed by Flory Badunga. I don't know about the rest of the world. Cole Rosario, who we thought was going to be the number 2, was a total non-factor last night. Yeah. So you take Peterson out, you take Rosario out, and they were able to keep it within, again, 4, 5, 6 like, points.
My thing about this roster, sticking to this point, is that I really think that, like, in the Big 12, because they play in the Big 12 and they're going to go through the gauntlet, and it, you know, at times it might look good, at times it might look ugly, because that's just what it's going to be. I think that, like, if this roster, this is what I keep going back to in my head. If this roster, top to bottom, with Darren Peterson, played at West Virginia, like, I don't know how many games, like, they would be favored in the Big 12. Like, half, maybe?
Yeah,
KU will be favored because they have Bill Self and they've got the brand tilt a little bit as well, I think. But, like, I don't know if this is a top-end Big 12 roster. And I might be wrong about that, but like I don't think that like they've like if they finish top three, I think that there will be a lot of upsets along the way.
I get what you're saying. This is not a team to me that looks like it's like going to be close to winning the Big 12.
No.
And but again, that's that you got to be okay with that. Like this is a chip in a chair. I understand, but if you were tired of what you saw the last 2 years, this year was inevitable. There's no avoiding this year. Like you can't replace everybody and expect that team to walk in the door and win the Big 12. The team that you can expect to win the Big 12 that of course did not win the Big 12 is the team that returns two All-Americans, 80% of the starting lineup, should be one of the defensive juggernauts in college. All the things that the last 2 years were walking through the door in October. That's what you would say, okay, that team can win the Big 12. The best version of this team isn't going to be good enough yet to win the Big 12 this year. But they might be good enough to be real damn good in March and have a chance to beat anybody in the college basketball in the big tournament. That's what you hope for. And that's why there is absolutely, to me, no urgency, nor should there be, to get Peterson on the floor before his hamstring is 100%.
I agree. November basketball doesn't matter, and people know that. Like
not for Kansas.
Especially not for
Kansas,
KU.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It does for Wichita State.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, like, I don't know. Like, I get your point, but, like, it's 2025, and, like, the rebuild year isn't a thing anymore. And I think the fact that, like, if this team doesn't, you know, if, I don't know what the expectation is. I think if this team doesn't at least get this second weekend is what everybody keeps saying. But, like, if that doesn't happen, if they don't make the Sweet 16 for four straight years, like, there will be people pissed about that. Like, that's – and it's not something where it's just like, well, it was this roster, you know. It's like, yeah, you knew you had the number one player in the country coming in. Like, how come there wasn't more invested to build around them? And the roster, like, last night – I'm not talking about last night. Last night they played well. And if they play like that, I think that they will beat some good teams, especially if Cole Rosario gets going as well. But I think my main thing that I take away from last night, and it was to Rick's point, I'll pull up here, is that, like, what's going on with the bench? Like, El Marco Jackson played 6 minutes and took one shot last night. Like, Jamari McDowell played for a minute. Like, the only person that played any minutes at all was Jaden Dawson from Loyola, who was, like, the first guy they got. And I think that he kind of fell from grace and became a bench player. And so I don't know if the team is going to have enough pieces because the only person that's not out there is Darren Peterson, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I believe that's correct.
So, like, where is a seven-man rotation going to be enough?
Yeah, it is. I mean, usually Bill Self gets it down to eight or seven by the end of the year anyway. So that's not particularly different than what we've seen, right? Like that's pretty normal. I'm looking at Duke, for instance, and just in their starting five, I believe obviously they have you know, the Boozers who are new to the program, but they've got players that are coming back, right? They're in the second year with the program, in some cases the third year with the program. Now they're stepping into bigger roles. But you're looking at the top team in the country, and I believe everybody but the Boozers of the guys that play significant minutes, I think those are not – I don't think any of those players are new. And you go up and down Houston. They're great because they return a bunch of players. It's going to be the case for most of these teams at the top, and usually it is for Kansas as well. So, yeah, look, the rebuild part of it is certainly not an excuse. But the reality is they're rebuilding at a level we're just not accustomed to seeing. And here's the part that maybe makes you a little bit uneasy. Okay, well, what does next year look like? Like, at what point do you have a bunch of players coming back that can help you? Like, is Cole Rosario going to be a second-year player? Badunga, be awesome if he came back as a junior. But he's really talented, and the NBA probably will like him a lot. You know, there's... I don't know how much it's going to take a little bit of time. Like, these are all the repercussions of the way that they built their roster the last 2 years before this year. These are the repercussions of what happens when you just don't have minutes for anybody else, right? Like those teams brought in, they would bring in, like, the goal is to get two guys to come in and just fill out the like, there just weren't a lot of minutes for guys to get experience in the, and that's going to take a little bit of time to, like, to get clear of that. I hope that with a freshman like Darren Peterson, you don't have to worry about it as much, but unfortunately for them, he's just not playing right now.
I don't know what he's going to be. I hope they finish top half.
Like, he's going to be a star.
If they finish top five, he will be incredible.
A top five in the Big 12?
Yes.
We can talk about that. What should an expectation be when we return? Sports Daily, Tom Brockton, Cleveland on a Wednesday. Don't go away.
Aloha, Mr. Hyde.
Aloha to a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. Glad to be here with you, everybody. It's Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, TJ Cleveland. We've got Shreyas Lada, our KU insider, coming up. A lot of what we're talking about, we'll kind of get the feel for Shreyas and, of course, get the very latest on Darren Peterson and what's going on the recruiting trail for next year as well. That's on tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, where groups gather for holiday fun. Bring a whole family and your out-of-town visitors to WBC for a taste of pizza and beer made here. East near Central and Woodlawn, West at 13th and Tyler, and in historic Delano at Handley, Wichita Brewing Company, where groups gather for the holiday season. We come back in. We're talking KU. How to sort of digest what we're seeing from KU. All of these things going into it. And then you brought up, you know, top five in the Big 12. Yeah, look, I don't think this team's going to win the Big 12, but I think top five in the Big 12 is a fine expectation. But for me, and as the season slogs along, assuming Peterson is gets back by conference play and all those kinds of things, like, that'll be really interesting stuff to look at as we go. But I've always thought with this year, it was the inverse of the last couple. I just need this team to make the tournament and be playing at a level where they can win tournament games. Their seed, their standing and things, like, none of that to me matters this year. This isn't the year for all of that. And it was never going to be, because we just, like, we don't know anything still really about this team. The only thing we know, and I think is fair to expect, is that they get better over the course of the year. And if they do, what is that ceiling, and how deep a run could this team potentially make when that time comes?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question that I'm asking, is the fact of what should KU be? Like, we've said on this show that
they should always be a second weekend team. Yeah, KU's to me, in my opinion, and I've always felt this way, you can get a barometer of your season if you want to try to take something from the tournament, because it is so insane and difficult. And the second weekend should always be your baseline for a program like KU. They should always be figuring into the Sweet 16, basically. Yeah, and then you go from there.
If they're not in the Sweet 16, they got upset by somebody. But I think that as much as a crapshoot that March Madness is, as you've said, like, we've talked on the show how insane the Big 12 championship streak was. So, like, what is KU basketball? And I think that we've still not really found what that answer is. I think what they win it, they won it in 2022, the Grady year, they won the Big 12. Yeah, they were a one seed. They won the Big 12 that year. Mm-hmm. And so since then they haven't. And it's just like, what should they be doing? Like KU is a blue blood. Like, they're still considered probably a top three program in all of college basketball, I would say. It's like, what does that translate into? Like, what should, like, KU fans, no offense, KU fans, I grew up a KU fan, are the kings of saying the sky is falling whenever they lose games.
True.
And for good reason. It's KU. Yeah. You're not supposed to lose the games. So, like, what, it's less now. Like, the sky wasn't falling last night. What do they want out of this team?
Well, they want it to be considered one of the top two or three programs every single year. And typically it is. It's been so strange the last three. Like, you couldn't to say they need to recruit different, or they had the preseason number one team for two straight years. So if we're talking just about expectations and where you want them to see sitting at the beginning of the year and all that, that's what they've done. This year was never going to be like that. Kansas wasn't going to walk into this year and be a preseason number one. They've got a star freshman and a whole lot of other players that you hope are going to be better. We know that Badunga's upside is there, and that's playing itself out, I think. But, like, again, this wasn't and isn't going to be the year of what the last two were, that where the team is peaking right out of the gates. And that is fine, because I don't think anybody has been thrilled with where those teams ended up. All we care about with this team, or at least for me, is where do they end up? Not where are they in the Champions Classic against Duke? I don't care much, especially care if Darren Peterson's not playing.
I agree. It's a barometer, but it doesn't matter because it's November basketball and it's KU.
Barometer? They looked fine last night. They did. They looked just fine. Like most people thought that was going to be a big Duke win.
I think they got to
12. That was not a big Duke win.
Given the circumstances, I agree. It was a fine performance. But the question is, fine by what standard? Like you don't have Darren Peterson. So
fine
what
by what my expectations are at the end of this year.
Yeah. So like what is like
it, Sweet 16. That's like, my expectation.
Do people think that by watching what they saw last night and adding Darren Peterson to that team, like, do they think this is a Big 12 title contender? Do they think that this is a national championship contender? Like, what are they building towards?
I think, look, you always expect to be building toward a national championship when you're KU. I think it's just, I just don't think it's realistic to think of them as a Big 12 winner, because I don't think they're going to, I think it's going to take longer than that to hopefully be peaking. Do you plop Darren Peterson onto the roster we saw yesterday and the way that they played, and that team's going to go win a national championship? No, but that's not the right way to look at it, because you're expecting growth from all of them, not just Peterson. Like, it's Peterson coming back and these other players also getting better over the course of their young college careers, first or maybe second season. Like, you've got to, when you talk about the end result expectation, you're baking in improvement for Cole Rosario. You're baking in improvement for Flory Badunga. You're baking in chiseled out and defined roles for Trey White and Melvin Council. Bryce, I thought Tiller looked pretty good last night, honestly.
Tiller's been like the biggest surprise of the year. He's really helpful
physically.
For a team.
Every time he's out there, I'm like, man, who is that? He kind of looks like, who does he look like to me a little bit? Just like athletically, he looks like some of these guys, like David McCormick, maybe. You're like, is that okay? Who's that guy? And then you're like, oh, that's Tiller. Like,
It's a good thing that he is what he is for a team that is like 5.5 deep. I'll say it that way. Like, last night they were 5.5 deep. Like, it's a good thing that Tiller, because he's going to be the guy that is either coming off the bench or he's going to start and put, you know, whoever on the bench, Melvin Council on the bench, or whoever, Trey White, I don't know who it would be. But like, that helps a ton, because he was another question mark of, he was here last year, he couldn't play, but he was here. So
the ceiling for KU will be defined by Peterson, by Badunga, and by Rosario. I'm pretty confident in that, but it also is going to be aided by the roles that everybody else grows into. And so, like, on a normal KU team, you know the roles even as everybody else kind of comes up, right? We know the roles of most of the players on the floor. Like, this is your defensive lockdown guy. This is your spot shooter. This is your glue guy. Like, we had those roles, and then, like, who grows with them in those other spots? But Jalen Wilson's not walking through that door, right? Like, that player for them is just, we all expect to be Darren Peterson. And we're expecting him as a true freshman to be an All-American. And I think that he can be and will be as long as he plays, as long as he's able to physically get out there and go. So what does everybody else grow into? It's going to be Badunga. It's going to be Rosario. So if it's three young guys, a sophomore and two freshmen, how long do you think it's going to take before we hopefully see them peak? I mean, it's going to be February. It'll take some time. And I know that's going to be frustrating and annoying for fans. Just like it, but it is what it is. Like, it's going to take some time. Do they play at Houston this year? They're probably going to go down to Houston and they're going to get their butts kicked. Probably. And it'll be fine. Because again, it's how do they use that to build on what they do in March? And until the live ammo starts flying for these young guys, they're not going to know what that's like. So we got to let them get in there. We got to let them react to it. And it is. It's going to be uneasy, I think, for KU fans this year. But that to me has been as predictable as anything. This was always going to be an up and down year, much like the last two have been. The only difference is the last two, they came in as preseason number one. This team comes in with, in my opinion, regular season. The expectations are like, not even that, like, who cares? Like, that's not what it's all about this year.
Yeah. It's a big question. I think that the biggest overarching thing is the fact of, you know, where is KU basketball? And I think that that answer will keep changing over the years, I think. And I think that
they got the number one player in the country to come there this year. And they look like they have a good chance to get the number one player next year to come too. I think you don't need to worry about that. I think they've got the resources and the ability. They got stuck with a roster for 3 years where they didn't have room to grow and develop any other players. And these are the consequences of that, that it's going to take a minute to get a few players to be able to be in there with these star freshmen that they're going to be able to recruit in this new era, right, of seemingly unlimited resources. That's just the way it's going to be. It's going to take a year or two for them to rebuild the program.
It's just harder. It's just harder than it used to be is the biggest thing I can say about it, because everybody's better now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's yes, maybe so. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk to Shri Aslada about it in a little bit. When we return, we got more Sports Daily. We'll step away from college basketball for a minute here on the show. Don't go away.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
One day only, Thanksgiving Day deals are coming to Lowe's.com. Plus, members get early access to online Black Friday doorbuster deals on gifting favorites, like the still-trending Cobalt Mini Toolbox for just $14.98. Don't miss up to 50% off for one day only at Lowe's.com. We help you save. Valid 11/27 only on Lowe's.com. Member only doorbusters and Midnight Eastern. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change while supplies last.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Black Friday? More like Black Fry-yay. Shop the DSW Black Friday sale and take 30% off almost all the shoes, accessories, and giftable goodies we've got at DSW.com. Plus 30% off just about every regular price item at your DSW store. Score shoes that get you and everyone on your list at prices that get your budget. So carpe the deal. Head to Designer Shoe Warehouse and get that gift list done. DSW, let us surprise you.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop, we've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Dude, you gotta hear this. Hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you. If you want to win tickets to see Journey, a pair of tickets at Interest Bank Arena on April 4th, you can enter this contest by texting the keyword Journey to the number 20357. One entry daily until Friday. Standard message and data rates apply. Jacob Allrock, TJ Cleland here with you. We'll have Shreyas Lotta coming up in just a little bit. TJ, the college football playoff rankings are out. Ohio State is up at the top. Indiana, Texas A&M, Georgia. No surprises with any of those. Texas Tech is at 5 now. So if we're looking at where the Big 12 stands, you've got Tech up there at 5, and then you've got BYU and Utah at 11 or 12. The problem would be that BYU and Utah right now are on the outside looking in because you've got to get in your ACC champion, which at this point would be Miami, and then your next highest, right, which would be all the way down at number 24 with Tulane. So the Big 12, if it wants even two in, has some work to do. You look at Alabama down there at 8-2, who just lost, right? Oklahoma went to their place and beat them. Alabama gets their cupcake. And then at Auburn, and I don't think they're going to play in an SEC championship game. So that's going to be a challenge, probably. Oklahoma gets Mizzou and LSU, probably a little more likely that you might make up a little ground. So I think if you want two teams in from the Big 12, it's probably going to need to be Tech winning out and then losing in the Big 12 championship game. Otherwise, TJ, I don't know how many times we can have this conversation. It's looking like we could be in a situation where one Big 12 team gets into the college football playoff.
Yeah, it's looking that way. It's going to take some circumstances to get them in. I don't really know how the
because
best
if
way
BYU
to do it
or
is.
Utah is in position and in a Big 12 championship game loses to Tech, they're going to fall out.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be their second loss, third loss?
Yeah. Second for BYU, third for Utah.
Yep. I mean, that's the only way in. And I think that's kind of the recipe that's going to have to happen. Like, I think that, like, it's usually going to be one. I don't know. Like, this would be the case if 2022, K-State would have been in and TCU would have also been in. Like, that's how that typically will fall. The past couple of years, it's kind of been one team will be in, and then, well, I guess last year was weird with Arizona State and who did they even play? Iowa State. I think Iowa State was right there, so they could have had a chance too, but I think that loss put them out of contention as well. So there will have been, like, the Texas year whenever they won it over Oklahoma State, I believe that team was. Like Oklahoma State could have won and Texas would have lost and still been in as well. So that's really the recipe for the Big 12, for the ACC, like we saw last year that happened with them. That's just kind of what the reality is going to be, because at the end of the day, their schedule's not as tough as the SEC teams and or the big, I mean, the Big Ten teams at the top, at least. So that's the tough part to fit them in. So I don't know if I still agree with the model that they want to do, but
yeah, I mean, this is also one of those interesting spots where we'll be looking at it and you'll say, man, if let's say BYU wins out and let's say Oklahoma loses a game and you've got BYU at 10 and BYU's at 10 and Texas Tech wins out, it'll be a situation where it's like, well, man, it'd be better for the league if they weren't playing this Big 12 championship game. But at the same time, that game leaves the window open for a lot of teams that could still get there. But it is a little bit like those conference championship games, like they can hurt you. And that could happen this year. I think if Texas Tech gets there unscathed and loses, they'll still be in. And that would be that. I believe that's probably going to be the only path to two teams from the Big 12 getting in this thing. And I hate that. I hate that, because if BYU is there and in position and lose, they'll be out. This is why I don't hate the model that guarantees two Big 12 teams in there. I just think every year it's going to be really difficult for them to do. It's not a knock on the Big 12. It's not at all. It's just, it's the league is so even year. There is not a haves and have nots in the Big 12 like there are in the Big 10, and to a lesser degree to the SEC, but certainly to the Big 10, where you've got usually two or three or maybe four awesome elite teams and a whole bunch of hot garbage teams.
I mean, I agree with it. It's hard to get two teams in, and having two in guaranteed would be great, but I just think it's more so the fact, and I think that Brett Yormark's in the same spot, is that you just can't get on board with giving the Big 10 four auto bids. Like,
right.
That's the thing that's going to hinder that forever. If what would that be? So if two SECs, two Big Tens, two eight. Big 12s, yeah. So eight, and then one group four of five,
at largest, three at
would
largest.
leave you with six, seven.
No, in a 16, yeah, it, yeah. You 17. In a 16, you'd have seven six at largest.
Six at largest. And, if you and get you'd two have five, yeah.
And most of the time, probably at least half those go to the SEC, and that's probably fair in reality.
If that was what it was, then I'd be on board for it. The SEC and the Big Ten never would.
It would. The one downside to the two guarantees is that really would nullify the importance of a conference championship game. Like, it would basically just wipe it out. Because sure. Who cares at that point?
Who wins the game?
So I get all the things against it. I just don't know.
The best what, way this
in
is, this
what
is real
world,
deep in the weeds here.
In what world is the Big 12 ever going to be in a good and consistent position to put two teams in? I would say if all stayed the same. Now, let's be fair to this too. And this is on me, because whenever I think about this, I am thinking about it in a 12 team format. Of course, we should be talking about a 16 team.
Yeah, they might have
format.
Three in.
Well, maybe, but here comes that really challenging question again of, let's say it's BYU in there with Tech and BYU loses. Does Utah move ahead of BYU? What if it got to a point where Utah stays exactly where they are and BYU falls down because they lose and a couple other teams underneath them win? Like, that could also be challenging, but to be fair, in a 16-team format, this could be a year, yeah, where three could get in, but three would get in whether they were guaranteed two or not, I think, because you'd have four and four makes eight, and it would leave six anyway. So I think they'd get in either way, but not three. So maybe this is a year for it's a challenge. I'm less convinced than I used to be. I'm more okay with just letting the chips fall where they may, but I still envision years where it's going to bite them in the butt and they'd be like, man, I wish we had two guaranteed.
To get real deep in the weeds here, I don't know if you've ever seen this. This was a thing that started floating around last year because it always has the issue. that we're talking about right now, and we're going to be talking about it in December as well, about how come a team that loses a conference championship game gets penalized more than a team that didn't make the championship game. And it's the argument every single year that you
every
have
year.
At-large playoff bracket. The argument that somebody made last year or 2 years ago, I can't remember what it was or who it was, but it was something where that like your conference championship games just become play-ins, and you structure the bracket to say there's five play-in games on here. But then like that is what leads into this.
My thought on this is, and this is a change I think they should make across college, but this would have, I think, prevented last year's Indiana team from getting in. They didn't play anybody all year. I'm not saying that about them this year, but last year they didn't play anybody because they got lucky with their schedule. I think the fix to that is to do a – so, like, let's say you have your conference championship game, right? Make 3 and 4 also play each other in a game. You just make it a home game for 3. Right, that people get excited about because it's another game. You get rid of one of the cupcakes and you leave room for that. If you really wanted to get wild and you really want to know what I think, you have a conference tournament. You have like but then you don't need the second game, so that's not really necessary. But if you at least make 3 and 4 play, you're making 3 potentially earn something, right, to get in. It's not foolproof. We're always going to have this challenge. And I do like the concept of a conference championship game winner being guaranteed a spot. So I don't want to get rid of conference championship games by any means. But there's going to be years where this comes up. It seems to come up all the time. Mm-hmm. If BYU plays and loses to Tech in a Big 12 championship game, they can't fall below Utah. So they probably would just not move, right? They beat Utah. Not only did Utah not have to play a game, BYU beat them head to head. I mean, you can't drop them below.
Yeah, it's always going to happen every single time, and it happens in basketball. But the good part about basketball is that the tournament is ginormous, and you play so many games that you've got like uber amount of data points. And that's the thing about March Madness. And whenever you get into the discourse about like, oh, well, this team, if K-State was snubbed from the tournament, K-State was like the 45th best team in the country. Like, nobody's going to lose sleep over the 45th best team in the country not making it in.
That's
except
right.
For K-State fans, obviously.
Right.
Or whoever it may be. It's an example. But in football, I mean, the 13th ranked team in the country not getting in, sometimes it's the 12th or the 10th ranked team in the country because of the auto bids. Like, that sucks.
It used to be
the 5th best team in the country. It used to be the 3rd.
We're getting there. Like, it's coming along. Nobody will be mad if this goes to 16. You might pretend you are in the beginning, and then it'll play. Like, is anybody right now, anybody out there saying, man, I really wish we were back to 4.
No.
Literally anybody.
It's pretty – I feel like it's kind of funny that, like, there's more – it feels like there's more traction for March Madness expanding than it is the college football playoff expanding.
Which is silly.
But nobody wants March Madness to expand, and everybody wants the college football playoff to expand.
Well, not everybody. There were some people that didn't want it past 2 because they would have told you then the games mean more in the regular season. That was always the argument. I'm like, nobody plays each other. Like, you can't – it's so silly that we don't at least have conference champions all represented. But and then it was 12. We can't go to 12, and now we're at 12. Does anybody, 1 year into this thing, is anybody like, man, I really wish it was back down to 4? No. Does anybody sit with the NFL playoffs and say, man, I wish it wasn't 7. I wish it was back down to 6 or whatever it is. Of course not. No.
We got five minutes here. Let's dig into what I just brought up. It's randomly in the middle of November. Should March Madness be expanded? Are you pro that? Are you pro 72?
I will tell you that I don't really care. I don't have a strong take on it. I don't think it will impact the thing about March Madness that I love the most at all. If you want to have bubble teams all playing each other in early week games like we have now on Tuesday and Wednesday, like if all the 10 seeds have to play each other. Like, I don't care. It's not that big a deal. At the end of the day, it puts more fan bases in it, and that's fine. But it's not going to make a bit. Like, to me, the tournament starts when you get to Thursday. Here's the only thing with expansion that I don't want to see that would make me mad. If all of a sudden now all your Cinderellas have to play each other before the actual tournament starts, that's the only thing that they expand that would annoy me. Because now you are infringing upon my tournament greatness, which is always that outside chance that a true Cinderella, right? Not Syracuse being a 10 seed, like a true Cinderella getting a win in the actual tournament. So as long as they don't do that, then I'm fine.
And I'm even back to the part where, like, and I understand why they do it and why the teams like it, but the six teams having to play each other to get in is always so lame to me as well. I think that every play-in should be a bubble team. If you got an auto bid, I feel like you should get a crack.
Auto bids do not get the early. I totally agree. That's the only thing that, like, if you want to put more bubble teams in, great. Don't care. Fine. It's not going to impact anything for me. Also, the tournament for me will start on Thursday. Unless Wichita State's playing in it, the tournament for me is going to start on Thursday, and that's when it. And so none of this other stuff matters. I don't have a hot take on that. I don't care if they expand it or if they don't expand it.
Yeah,
as long as they leave the main part of the tournament alone and don't mess.
I think I'm in that boat more so than the fact of like I really don't understand all the pushback around it, unless it is what we're talking about.
It's just such a big number. People are like, oh, it's ridiculous. Everybody gets in. But it's not going to impact how you watch the tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the best team has to win six games. And I think that that's – and if a bubble team wants in, you got to win seven. And I think that that's just kind of the argument to be made about that. Basketball is good.
I go through this exercise every year. As wild as the tournament is and the format is outrageous – teams outside of a top four seed have almost no chance to win it. Historically, it almost never happens. It's happened just like literally a handful of times. And one of the times it was UConn, and maybe two of the times it was UConn. Like it's so unlikely for a team to make it all the way through. Like if you're talking about the likelihood of winning it, you could have a 16 team tournament because 95% of the time, that's who's winning the tournament anyway. So it really is like we only have those beginning parts for the first week of the tournament and how much fun it is. I don't think this impacts that at all. So for me, it doesn't like I just don't get too worked up about it whatsoever. I think expanding the college football playoff is a far more interesting conversation on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, we're teetering the line, I think, is the only thing with that is the how much football is going to be too much college football.
I don't disagree. I think you can get too big. I will say, as somebody who went to a Division II, and I know you did too, but a Division II with a good football team, I think that bracket is 32.
Yeah, it's big.
And it was like, it was fun. Like, it was a lot of fun, but it's set up in such a different way. It was set up by regions. And so it was a little bit different. Like the teams never really play each other. So you've got nothing to go off of. It's a little bit easier to have a better understanding. I've always thought 16, it makes the most sense and is perfect. It gets your conference champions in. It gives teams that started slow but might be the best team still a chance to get in. And it gives teams with an injury, let's say, at some point in the year. Like, let's say Texas Tech had lost one more game somewhere while their quarterback was out, while Bear Morton was out. I would really want to see that team have a chance to go toe-to-toe with some of the – so it also allows for that. Like, that team lost their quarterback in the middle of the season for a couple of weeks, but man, they look good. And I think a 16 gives them a chance to still get in there. That's the other thing, I think. And then there's the other side of it. And I would ask you this, and I was going to anyway. How many teams right now do you think are capable of beating Ohio State?
Three.
Maybe.
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 Yeah.
Tech, A&M, and Georgia?
Maybe.
Maybe. That's and that's the other side of it, right? It doesn't matter. Like, usually the cream rises to the crop. It's very, 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 very top.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
That insider is Shreyas Lotta. Glad to be with Shreyas again this week, coming off of a loss there to Duke in New York City, Shreyas. We've spent a lot of time with, like, what do we take away from this one? I think that, you know, honestly, a lot of the players not named Darren Peterson looked okay in that one. I'm not terribly disappointed in the performance, but what was your bird's eye read on the game last night?
Yeah, I'm currently in my hotel room in New York, actually, but I came away pretty impressed, honestly. I feel like this is the first time Kansas as a team has looked pretty good, decent. Is the word I'd use. I feel like, you know, you could clearly see they were a Darren Peterson away from making that a competitive game or at least a win. But I felt like I came out of that game thinking the rest of the team stepped up, I think, in a way that I didn't expect them to. They didn't, like, die on impact. You know, they played out with a lot of energy from the get-go. They were impressive on defense. They muddied up a good Duke offense. Trey White played really well. Floyd Badunga played really well. Melvin Council had a really good second half shooting wise after a tough first half. I think there were a lot of positives. I mean, I think the only thing I can be negative about is their shooting is such an issue right now, I think, because of the fact that, like, they don't really have any ball handling outside of Melvin Council. So then you're forced to have him take some really tough, if not wild shots, as we saw in the first half, because there's no guys that can create their own shot. And if there's nobody who can shoot the ball, then, like, who's going to score, right? So I think sometimes we saw that in the game against Duke where he was just forced to kind of put something up because he did that at St. Bonaventure a lot because he was the entire team. And he shouldn't have to do that at Kansas.
Yeah, Shreyas, I'm glad you got to sleep in, by the way. He's running at 9:40 today instead of 8:40 on the East Coast.
I did not sleep in. I got up at 6:30 to get breakfast with a friend. I've been running around everywhere in New York.
City that never sleeps. One thing that we've talked about a lot today is the fact of, you know, what the rest of the team is. Something we talked about a lot all season whenever Darren isn't out there is that this is the group of guys that they've got. And, you know, it feels weird because, like you said, and I think this is the sentiment that a lot of KU fans have, is that you walk away from a 12-point loss to Duke, you know, feeling optimistic. Like, I don't remember a KU team where one guy would affect the outcome as much as Darren Peterson does. Like, I think that if Hunter Dickinson didn't play in a game, like, they'd still have a chance to win a lot of the games that they won. I think that, you know, we saw Kevin McCullough go down. They were still a really, really good team. They weren't as good, but they would still beat a lot of really good teams. Like, what is this team that without Darren? It sounds like you're, you know, not happy, but you're content with a 12-point loss to Duke with the rest of this roster. What's that say about the roster?
You know, I like the way they play without him. I mean, you know, they played tough. They played hard basketball. I mean, everyone knew they were going to lose the game without him. I think that was without question. It was, how are they going to look losing the game? And they passed the test of, well, they didn't roll over and die. I think if you're a Kansas fan, you have to come out of there thinking, wow, this team really fought. You know, they were competitive against a really good Duke team, a Duke team that has five stars coming off the bench like, you know, nobody's business, a team that doesn't even have on KenPom an average of 1 year of Division I experience per player. They're a very young team, and you could see that at points last night. But I think from this Kansas team, it's clear that it's so configured around Darren Peterson. If anything positive you can take away from these games without him is, well, they're learning how to play without him. So when he's on the bench, when he comes back, they should look better in those minutes, theoretically. Obviously, what is probably happening is if he comes back, you know, after Vegas, which is what I expect, but obviously depending on what happens Friday, it might take a little bit of time to reconfigure the team because they might have played a different style of basketball than they would with Darren Peterson. I can't hear you.
You act like he hosts the show, Sharice. He doesn't know how to unmute his microphone. what is the?
Sorry, I coughed. I think everybody appreciates that. So you said after Vegas, Sharice.
I think so. Bill said they would reevaluate Friday. So obviously things can change, but like if you're thinking logistically and logically, you always want to play it safe. There's no point in playing that tournament in the Players Era. And I'd heard about the hamstring thing. Like I think I reported out there like before Bill said it was an issue, and then Bill said it was happened that Tuesday, and then he came back and said it actually happened before that. It seems like, and I asked him this last night, it seems like the cramps of the hamstring are kind of related, even though that, you know, he's not dealing with the cramps anymore, according to self. But I think just by being cautious and looking at the calendar, I bet he comes back the UConn game. Maybe there's a chance late next week, but I wonder if they would just decide to be safe and let him take the extra week off in with the Vegas games.
What do you take into going into that Players Era? It's the first time KU's played in the Players Era. We got a little bit of time until we get into that, I guess. Or I guess that's coming up next week. I don't have that much time as I thought. what do you take going into that tournament? It's so much different than the Maui Invitational, than going to the Bahamas, things of that nature. And this seems like it's the future of what midseason tournaments are being for these, you know, powerhouses.
Yeah, I mean, they're not playing amazing opponents. I mean, they're playing Syracuse that almost lost to Mount Monmouth. I can't pronounce your name. I definitely know how to say it, but I forgot. Yesterday they barely beat them. And then they're playing Notre Dame, which is, I mean, you know, Notre Dame is a football school. Let's call it what it is. So I'm not, like, worried about them. But, you know, I think the big thing with these games is, can they stack some win together if Darren Peterson doesn't play? And if they can stack some wins together, I think that's a positive thing. Like right now, their record is 4-2, and I'm sure they would like to be better than that. You know, they probably wish they had the UNC game back, looking back on it. But I honestly, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it matters. Like, I'm at the point of, like, tell me when it's conference basketball season. Yep. Because, like, all these games are just, like, such non, like, sequitur of, like, what is actually going to happen, because we've seen two seasons of college basketball where Kansas has played really good in non-conference play, and the minute Big 12 play hits, they're just not that good. I don't think that team is like this. I think this team is a lot better than that, but they win, they lose. It's more about trends for me than the actual win-loss record.
It sounds like you've been listening to the show, because we said that earlier, is that November does not matter if you're Kansas Jayhawks. It does not matter at all what you do in this month of November. I think that one of the biggest, you know, themes that we've taken away from last night is, and as again, all season long, we've been seeing the same thing over and over again. What is a reasonable expectation? We say that we're happy with what we saw last night, and they're one Darren Peterson away from being blank. Like what is the blank? What should an expectation for this team be?
I think a second weekend team, at least. Like, you should expect this to be a second weekend team. I don't know after that, to be honest with you. I think it depends on how the rest of the guys turn out. I think their shooting, to me, is going to be a big question mark if Cole Rosario cannot figure out how to make a bucket from behind beyond the arc. I think he's – speaking of Cole, I was really impressed with him yesterday. Like, his defense, his help defense, his tenacity on the offensive boards, rebounding. I just need him to make a bucket, man. Like, I need him to shoot. Like, that's the thing they brought him on to give this Kansas team. And once he figures that out, he's going to be special. And I think he already is. But, I think the ceiling of this team for me is so unclear, because there's a lot of young guys that I feel like are scratching the surface of their potential. Like, Floyd probably played the best game he's played in a Jayhawk uniform against a real opponent yesterday. Like, to put up 14-6 against Duke is not something easy. And he held his own against Cameron Boozer, you know, when he had to guard him. I thought he made it very difficult for him. And when Kansas had to send doubles when Bryson Tiller was guarding him and Cam Boozer, he had to, you know, pick up his dribble and either pass it out or take a wild shot. I mean, he finished 7-17. A guy who's going to be a top three NBA pick next year, finishing 7-17 is probably the best you're going to get.
I want to go back to Darren Peterson real quick, because it's good to hear that the cramps and hamstring might be related. Why does Kansas have such a hard time with these injuries? And, like, this could have been so simple. hey guys, like it turns out he has a hamstring injury. We're going to shut him down for a couple of weeks here. But they never, like, whether it was Kevin McCullough in his back, whether it was Remy Martin back in the day, like they really struggle. And I'm like, I don't have the energy for the conspiracy theories out there. Like it feels like Kansas could just handle this much easier and just say he has a bad hamstring. He's injured. Darren Peterson is injured with a hamstring. He will be shut down for 2 weeks. Like, why is that so difficult for them?
I think logically speaking, there is a belief that this is the only year, which I mean, it is the only year you're going to watch Darren Peterson, right? So if you rule him out early, there will be less fans that showed up to games or less enthusiasm around this team. I think it's got to be
we're
that.
We're throwing more conspiracies out there. Jeez. I like it.
No, but I think it makes sense to me because it's like, you know, like why would you rule him out? I also think it's something that's a developing thing. I think it's been nagging. Like Bill Self said it yesterday. This is something that's been ongoing for a while now. So I think they didn't expect this thing to be a three-game absence. Now it's a three-game and potentially counting absence. He's going to reevaluate it Friday. I think the lack of transparency is Bill Self just doesn't want to talk about this. It's that. I mean, when Bill Self wants to talk about something and he knows he believes what he's talking about, he will come out there and say something that makes you believe what he's saying. He has not been good at lying about this thing. Basketball coaches are really good at lying about this.
Just don't need to lie. It's a hamstring injury. It's not a big – like, nobody – I really don't think people would be that disappointed. They're like, oh, crap, he's got a bum hamstring. Well, we'll see him when he gets back.
I mean, they'd
be disappointed he's not playing, but they wouldn't be trying to figure out why he's not playing.
That's fair. I think people have this like belief that these guys should be playing on everything because they make millions of dollars a year. I think there's a little bit of that attitude. I talked to a bunch of fans pregame, and obviously these were fans that were sitting right behind the basket. So I think they're a different level of income than the typical fans I see in my Twitter mentions. But most of the time, at least. But I was pretty impressed with their ability to kind of have the long view on things of like, well, I mean, these games don't really matter. Yes, I'd like to see him play Duke. Yes, I'd like to see him play UConn or whatever. But it's Big 12 play. And yes, I'm a little disappointed that he's not here, but I'm still really excited to see this team. And I trust Bill Self and that kind of sentiment from the fans. But there is a, okay, well, he's getting paid X amount of money. He's got to go out there and play, and like it's going to hurt his draft stock if he doesn't play. Guys, him playing hurts his draft stock more. I've like been in the draft for a long time. You can't play.
He could not play a minute, and he'd still be a top five pick.
Yes.
He'd be Michael Porter Jr.
100%. It's the same thing with Kevin McCullough. Him playing hurt his draft stock. He should have shut it down earlier. It's the same exact thing.
Yeah, he'll be back. He's going to be awesome. Just give it a minute. KU fans, just give it a minute. Shreyas, go find all his work at the KC Star. Enjoy New York City.
Joe's Pizza. Go to Joe's.
Joe's.
It's mid.
Oh, my God.
Take him off the show.
Boy, Shreyas walked us off with a nuke there on the Joe's is mid. I'm not even 100% sure what mid means, but I think that was an insult.
It was.
We're going to have to circle back to that next week. Thanks for being here with us, everybody. You've got Butler Grizzlies basketball tonight. Butler on the road in Coffeyville. You'll hear that right here on KFH 97.5 FM 1240 AM. You can listen online at kfhradio.com or, of course, on the Odyssey app where you'll find this show podcasted out. If you missed anything with Shreyas, if you missed anything with Kevin Saul or our discussions on the losses last night, a little more chipper with a couple losses than I think we'll typically be in a week or so when it comes to college basketball. But there it is for you. TJ and I will see you on the air on 12 News a little bit later today. For Max, thanks to Shreyas Lotta and Kevin Saul. And TJ, I'm Jacob. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Get ready to shop Lowe's Black Friday Doorbuster Deals to save $150 on a 30-inch Blackstone griddle, now $299. Plus, choose a Whirlpool top load washer or Midea top freezer refrigerator for just $398. These limited-time Doorbuster deals go fast, so get holiday ready today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid 11/28 through 12/1. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop. We've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds.
True North has something truly fast and friendly. Introducing the True Rewards mobile app. Sign up to get instant access to member-only offers and in-store coupons. As a True Rewards member, track your club status, find a store, and redeem exclusive offers all in one place. Join today and save 25 cents per gallon on your first fill-up and save 5 cents every day. Savings are stackable with Shell Fuel Rewards. Download now from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.